Hello, listeners. John Sands speaking. Welcome to the Chester and Flint Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 24th of April. I hope all listeners are well and taking pleasure in the pleasant Easter time weather. It's often sunny, with the flowers blooming, the fruit trees in blossom, and the little birds searching for suitable places for their nests. Locally, there's an air of happiness around, in spite of worldwide upheavals. It reminds me of one lovely Easter time spent in the Lake District, which is my home area. My little family was staying with relatives near Ennerdale Water, where we had some lovely walks. One day, we decided to go to Eskdale, mainly in order to take a trip on Lyle Ratty, the miniature train which plies in the Eskdale Valley. In previous years, it had been used to transport various ores from local mines to Ravenglass, a journey of 7 or 8 miles. I drove to Ravenglass, deposited my beloved ones at the railway station. Then I was to drive up to the top of the line and pick them up, delighted, when their trip ended. It all worked well, and they were quite thrilled with the ride, the scenery, and the lunch that followed. The Esk winds down past the railway line. We found a lovely river bridge nearby and climbed down to a deep pool fed by a dashing current. It was too inviting to resist, so we all plunged in and swam. My, the water was cold, but we faced it and really enjoyed ourselves. It was different. Fortunately, we had towels in the car. It was only later I found out that we'd been bathing in one of the Lake District pools best known for skinny dipping, perhaps better referred to as wild bathing. Almost 50 years later, my son reminded me of our little venture, saying it was one of the most vivid memories of his childhood. The Lyle Ratty has had variable fortunes in recent times, but is very popular, featuring on television programs. I've been up and down the valley a few times, but just on the TV screen or walking stretches of the line, but never as a Lyle Ratty passenger. Well, you can't have everything. I hope that all listeners are having a pleasurable time wherever they are and taking advantage of the relatively fine weather. Now, what have the local papers to say? Life must go on in the Chester area, whatever is happening internationally. Sunrise in Chester on Sunday, 26th of April, is 5:48 a.m. and sunset is 8:31 p.m. And now, over to the readers.
Hello everyone, this is Helen Holyoake reading. A Chester carer who admitted stealing thousands of pounds from a vulnerable woman is due to be sentenced. Sharon London, 60, of Wordsworth Crescent, Blaken, pleaded guilty to one count of fraud by abuse of position on Tuesday. Prosecutor Nigel Jones said it related to her work as a senior carer for special needs care, where she took about £3,700 for herself from her vulnerable victim. Mr. Jones told the bench that it was suitable to be sentenced in the Crown Court, while Steve Alice, defending, argued for magistrates to maintain jurisdiction to allow for a quicker pre-sentence report to be ordered. Mr. Alice added, "It makes sense for this court to maintain it in the lower court while you order a pre-sentence report. Then sentencing court can make a decision if it needs to go to the Crown to be sentenced." John Rooney, chairman of the bench, told the defendant, "As you realise, you've pleaded guilty to a serious offence. To speed this up and make it smoother, we, the Magistrates Court, can order a pre-sentence report for the bench that will deal with you. London will return to court on May the 12th and was given unconditional bail.
Hello, Esther Newt here. A Stockport man who was linked to a burglary at a Chester petrol station by a receipt he dropped at the scene has been jailed for more than 3 years. Stephen Moores, 36, of Blackberry Lane, Brinnington, Stockport, was handed a 40-month sentence at Chester Crown Court on Friday, April the 17th. He had previously pleaded guilty to burglary other than a dwelling. On February the 18th, 2026, staff at Sainsbury's petrol station in Caldy Valley Road, Chester, discovered the premises had been burgled overnight. The wall had been smashed through with metal wall plates, bricks and breeze blocks removed to gain entry. More than £11,000 worth of cigarettes were then stolen from the display unit. Officers attended the scene and a receipt from a shop in Stockport was found in the rubble. Inquiries at the shop revealed that the individual who had bought the items had taken the shopping to the home address of Moores in a bag for life. Moores was spotted leaving his address at 10 p.m. on February the 17th, the night of the burglary, and was carrying the same bag for life which his shopping had been dropped off in. He was then seen returning to his address at 6 a.m. on February the 18th, without the bag for life. Footwear marks found at the scene of the crime also matched footwear which was recovered from Moore's address following his arrest. Police Constable James Wright said, "Moores kindly left a piece of important evidence at the scene of his crime, leading our officers straight to him. He committed the offence while on prison licence after being released from prison for a similar offence committed in Chester in 2023. I welcome the substantial custodial sentence handed to him, which reflects the severity of his crime and the fact that he has clearly not learned his lesson. I hope the sentence reassures the community that we are committed to tackling crimes against businesses, including burglaries, head on."
Hello, I'm Patrick Blunden. A Chester man has criticised Cheshire West Council for locking up vital disabled toilets in the Groves, which they have now apologised for. Robert Mason, aged 74, lives with bowel cancer and uses a mobility scooter or electric wheelchair to get himself around the city. He is a frequent visitor to the Riverside facilities as part of his day-to-day activities, especially when the sun is out. But recently, Robert, who requires the toilet many times a day, has not been able to use the disabled facilities close to the river, leaving him deeply disappointed. He said, "Last week I tried to get in and then I tried again on Wednesday. They were still locked and with no sign on the door or indication. Even with my radar key, it wasn't opening. It was completely shut. That's really disappointing for me and for a lot of disabled people who go down there, especially on a nice day. This is the only disabled toilet down there that you can get in with a wheelchair, and it makes me feel terrible as a disabled person. I go down to the river nearly every day, but because that was locked, I had to go into the general men's toilet. But because of the size of it, I struggled to get in there because of it's not built for electric wheelchairs or mobility scooters. The authority has confirmed the toilet was closed for repairs. A spokesman for Cheshire West and Chester Council said they will learn lessons from the lack of communication over the toilet closure. They said, "We are very sorry for the inconvenience. The flush was broken and that was why the disabled toilet was temporarily closed. This has been now fixed and the toilet is now accessible again. We will ensure clear signs are displayed in the future."
Hello, Jan Woodhouse here. Chester City Centre came to a standstill on Friday, April 17th, as crowds turned out to pay their respects to John Jennings, a friend to many in the city, John's coffin was carried through Chester in a horse-drawn carriage, pausing under the Eastgate clock, where a minute's silence was impeccably observed. Red and white heart-shaped confetti was released from the archway overhead as the crowd joined in a round of applause. The 65-year-old sadly passed away on Sunday, March the 15th, of a heart attack whilst running along one of his favourite routes in North Wales. His family, including his wife Deb, daughters Kim and Becky, and son John, followed the carriage to St Werburgh's Roman Catholic Church in Grosvenor Park Road. There were queues outside the church as his coffin was carried inside, with friends, family, colleagues, and representatives of several charities John had supported, coming to say their goodbyes. He attended the Catholic high school before learning his trade as a roofer and starting a successful business in the city, JMJ Roofing. As a roofer all of his life, his penchant for chatting with anyone and everyone, often from the top of a scaffold, was mentioned during the service. Father Rob said that John, a keen runner, had run the race of life, keeping the faith to which he was devoted and showing others kindness throughout.
Hello, Caris Biddle here. Recreational fishing lakes could be built on farmland in Chester if plans get the go-ahead. An application has been submitted by Dandy's Garden Supplies for two fishing ponds at land to the rear of Yew Tree Farm on Sealand Road, where the firm is based. The site is 2 miles from the city centre and located partially in the Greenbelt, protected land where planning is tightly controlled to guard against urban sprawl. According to the application, the Wales-England border runs along the western boundary of the development, with the access road being located in Wales. The 7-acre site consists mostly of undeveloped farmland. The application would see two lakes created, along with stages set approximately 10 to 15 metres apart around the embankment. There would also be a pedestrian footpath routed around both lakes, along with a rest and picnic area. Citing the proposed benefits, the application said there would be creation of accessible outdoor leisure opportunities, allowing support for local angling clubs and organised community use, including supervised events and matches, providing health and well-being benefits through the provision of access to outdoor recreation and social interaction. It added, the rural location of the development also offers users the opportunity to escape from the urban and suburban environments in which the majority live, to experience and enjoy the outdoors, and the site would employ 4 full-time staff.
Hello from Fiona Farga. An uncle and nephew who had admitted trespassing into a field in Seyton near Chester and hare coursing have been sentenced. James Callaghan, 48, and of Cliveden Road in Laich, and Connor Waring, 27, of Surrey Road in Hoole, appeared at Chester Magistrates Court for sentence on Friday the 24th of April. Both Callaghan and Waring had previously pleaded guilty to knowingly permitting dogs to be used for hunting a wild mammal, trespass with intent to search or pursue hares with dogs, taking game on a Sunday, being equipped for searching for or pursuing hares with dogs, and daytime trespass in pursuit of game or poaching. CPS prosecutor Charlie Hayward told the court that the incident had been reported to Chester Police by a gamekeeper on Sunday the 23rd of November 2025. A wildlife camera set up on farmland near the village triggered an email notification which alerted the gamekeeper to their presence shortly before 4 p.m. Callahan and Waring were seen crossing into the field with two Saluki dogs and also had with them a thermal imaging scope. The gamekeeper used a drone to follow their tracks, and they were also seen releasing a dog and pursuing a hare, which was later found dead. The court heard that Callahan had three previous similar offences on record, while Waring had one similar offence from 2023. Howard Jones, defending, said that Waring had undergone surgery for a brain tumour at the age of 17, which had left him disabled. Deputy District Judge Owen Jones told Callahan that he had led his nephew in the incident, adding that he was vulnerable and that Callahan should take the duty of care seriously. He also addressed the fact that it was his fourth appearance at court on similar matters, adding that he must take full responsibility for this. He concluded by telling Callahan that it was not custody on this occasion, but he would be knocking on the door if this continued. Callahan was given a 12-month community order and ordered to complete 130 hours of unpaid work and 15 rehabilitation action requirement days. Callahan will pay a surcharge of £114 and court costs of £85. Waring was fined £200 and will pay a surcharge of £80 and court costs of £85.
Nearly 300 jobs at a Flintshire furniture manufacturing plant have been lost following the collapse of the company. Westbridge Furniture near Holywell formally appointed Chris Pole and Will Wright from Interpath as joint administrators in March. It followed what Interpath described as operational disruption, weak trading, and the loss of a key customer for the company. On Thursday, April the 23rd, Interpath confirmed in an update that no offers to buy the business have been made and that the majority of Westbridge's 297 staff have sadly been made redundant. Interpath said the administrators will continue to provide support to those impacted, including supporting them with claims to the redundancy payment service. A small number of staff have been retained to assist the joint administrators in their duties. Chris Pole, Managing Director at Interpath and Joint Administrator of Westbridge Furniture Limited, said, "The team at Westbridge has shown exceptional professionalism in maintaining production while we explored options. Regrettably, as no viable offers for the business were received, it was no longer possible to continue trading, and we've had to take the difficult decision to close the business. We recognise this has been a challenging period for staff, and I'd like to express my sincere thanks for their commitment." The joint administrators have since agreed the sale of the exclusive intellectual property and design rights to the full Westbridge independent product catalogue to sofa and upholstery manufacturer White Meadow. The buyer intends to engage with stockists of Westbridge products to ensure continuity where possible.
Four Flintshire community projects have been awarded a share of £60,000 through the You Community Your Choice 2026 Fund, the North Wales Police and Crime Commissioner's Office has announced. Three of the four successful Flintshire projects are in Mould, and the fourth is in Holywell. Age and Dementia Friendly Holywell has secured funding for a community wellbeing trip called Joyful Journeys. Well Funny CIC, based in Mould, will run a Comedy for Change project aimed at young people at risk of committing or being convicted of an offence and at adult ex-offenders. Community Corners will run a community engagement project at Glenraven Community Centre. Positive Futures Mould will run a drop-in project to support young people in the area. The £60,000 fund is shared between 20 projects across 6 counties of North Wales. The press release does not state how much each project will receive. The scheme is run by the Office of the North Wales Police and Crime Commissioner, North Wales Police and North Wales Police and Community Trust. Projects are shortlisted by the 3 organisations and the final allocation is decided by public vote. This year, 20 projects were selected from a shortlist of 34. Andy Dunbobbin, North Wales Police and Crime Commissioner, said, "The Community Your Choice initiative is all about empowering local people to decide which projects can make the biggest difference in their communities. The initiative has awarded more than £700,000 to community projects across North Wales over the last 13 years.
The Sunday Gathering Artisan Market returns to Mould Town Centre on Sunday 26th April, with more than 30 stalls confirmed for the first date of the 2026 season. The market runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Daniel Owen Square and at the Daniel Owen Centre. Traders confirmed for the opening date include Havard Brewery, which is based in Mould, and K&G Chocolates. Stalls will offer food and drink alongside craft, gift and jewellery traders, with beers, gins and liquors also on sale. The Tegengal Tanglers, a Border Morris dance group, will perform on stage between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Organisers say they hope to host a classic car display at Meadows Place Car Park during market hours, though this has not been confirmed. Meadow Place Car Park will be closed to public parking while the market is running. Other car parks in Mould remain open and are free to use on Sundays. Mould Historic Guided Welcome Tours run alongside each market date with 8 walks available to book through Mould Town Council. The 2026 Sunday Gathering season will run on the last Sunday of each month through to October. The remaining dates are 31st of May, 28th of June, 26th of July, 30th of August, 27th of September, and 25th of October. An Emergency and Uniformed Services Day is planned to coincide with the June market on Sunday, 28th June. The Sunday Gathering is run by Sunday Gathering CIC, a non-profit community interest company that reinvests any surplus from the market into local projects in partnership with Mould Town Council. Traders, performers, community groups and classic vehicle owners interested in taking part at future dates can contact the organisers by emailing info@sundaygathering.org.uk. That's info@sundaygathering.org.uk.
MPs on the Welsh Affairs Committee have called upon the UK and Welsh governments to work together on coal tip safety, contaminated land and metal mine pollution across Wales. In a letter sent on the 20th of April to the Secretary of State for Wales, the Right Honourable Joe Stevens MP, the committee welcomed UK government funding for coal tip safety, but said it remained concerned about the lack of progress on managing contaminated land. Wales has more than 2,500 coal tips and over 1,300 abandoned metal mines and thousands of contaminated land sites, according to evidence gathered during the committee's ongoing inquiry. The letter notes that decades after coal, steel, chemical and metal mining operations ceased, communities across Wales continue to live with the environmental impact of that era. MPs also called for a long-term skills and apprenticeship pipeline designed specifically for former industrial communities to ensure local people can access jobs created by new industries and build the technical expertise needed to manage former industrial sites. The letter is an interim update to the inquiry, which has taken evidence from environmental organisations, Welsh local authorities, community regeneration experts, and both governments. The committee has asked the UK government to respond by the 20th of June. Ruth Jones, MP, chair of the Welsh Affairs Committee, said, "Our former industrial communities played a pivotal role shaping the country we have today. However, many of the communities that were once powered by heavy industries are left to shoulder the environmental and economic legacy of that era. Although welcome progress has been made to address coal tip safety, the evidence presented to us makes clear that without sustained and coordinated action from both governments, former industrial communities will continue to face long-term problems. We are calling for both governments to work together to have a plan to ensure long-term success."
Residents living in Caergwrle have slammed the state of their roads as an absolute shambles due to the potholes in the area. One concerned resident from the village submitted pictures to the Leader newspaper this week. The pictures show the large holes that have built up over time on the road at Bryn Yorkin Lane. The resident who submitted them added that the potholes have been reported to Flintshire Council's street scene team and branded them as dangerous. New research shows Flintshire drivers face some of the longest waits in the country, with potholes taking an average of 46 days to be fixed. The data, compiled by Go Compare for National Pothole Day in January, ranked Flintshire among the slowest councils in England and Wales. In response to the concerns at Caergwrle, Katie Wilby, Chief Officer for Street Scene and Transportation, said, "Bryn Yorkin Lane is subject to a 6-monthly inspection regime and is due its next scheduled inspection in May. However, following an ad hoc inspection, defects within the adopted carriageway were identified and remedial work will be scheduled in line with the improved policy. More generally, the council operates a risk-based approach to highway maintenance, with roads inspected at frequencies determined by their classification and usage. Defects identified through both scheduled and ad hoc inspections are prioritised and repaired according to their severity, ensuring the safety of all road users. Residents and highway users are encouraged to report defects via the Council's contact centre or website, as this ensures that issues are formally recorded and progressed through the appropriate procedures."
Residents say an unlicensed waste dump is blocking emergency access to a narrow street in Shotton. An access road that leads to the rear of properties on Heath Street in Shotton has been fenced off and rubble and waste dumped inside it. People living on the narrow residential street just off Rowley's Drive have challenged the legality of the waste site, which is not listed as a permitted site by Natural Resources Wales, claiming it has blocked vital rear access to properties, putting increased pressure on parking provision and risks attracting vermin. "It's an eyesore and it shouldn't be there," said resident Andy Gray. "I've seen no evidence that there's a permit to dump waste here, and it's a vital access point, particularly for emergency vehicles. Heath Street is very narrow. The rear entry has two narrow access points, a third that is blocked off by a bollard and this one, which is wide enough for an ambulance or fire engine to get into. The site is between two residential properties. Nick Isles, the landlord who owns one of the houses immediately next to it, said he and his tenants were concerned. They're worried because they're suddenly living next to a dumping ground," he said. It's having a negative effect on them, and it's putting pressure on parking. Surely it can't be right that this area can just be fenced off and waste material piled up in there. Flintshire County Council sent officers to inspect the site on Thursday, but the authority was unable to comment after inquiries showed that the land is classed as unadopted.
A new stage show all about sharks, hosted by world-renowned wildlife conservationist and TV presenter Steve Backshall, is coming to Chester Zoo this May half-term. The new show, running from the 23rd to the 31st of May, will take visitors on a fascinating journey into the lives and ancient origins of sharks, one of the planet's most extraordinary and misunderstood predators. Each 30-minute live show, which has been specially created for zoo audiences, will take viewers on a journey through time to discover the earliest sharks that once swam our shorelines, how they have evolved over millions of years, and what makes them such remarkable animals today. Featuring real shark teeth and jaws, lifelike replicas, and historic footage, visitors will have the chance to learn all about a wide variety of species, from the iconic great white to the unusual wobbegong shark. Drawing on his own experiences, Steve will also share stories from his own personal encounters with the ocean's most powerful predators. Visitors will also have the opportunity to ask questions to one of the planet's most revered wildlife conservationists. All ticket sales will support the zoo's vital conservation efforts, both in the UK and in more than 20 countries around the world. Gemma Wright, head of guest experience at Chester Zoo, said, "This new stage show has been created from scratch by Steve. Chester Zoo is the only place where you'll be able to see him perform it, so we're really excited." Steve aims to help people better understand species that are often misunderstood. Sharks play a vital role in keeping our oceans healthy, and experiences like this can help people feel more connected to the natural world and, importantly, inspired to go on and protect it. Steve Backshall Live will take place daily from the 23rd to the 31st of May, with shows running at 11:30 a.m., 1 p.m, 2:30 p.m, and 4 p.m. daily. Tickets are priced at £5 per person and can be booked online via the zoo website. Zoo visitors will also need to book Chester Zoo admission tickets for the day or have a valid membership to attend a show.
100-year-old in Ellesmere Port walks again with exercise. Bill McPhee, a dedicated participant in Brio Wellbeing's Fall Prevention Programme in Ellesmere Port, was referred by his daughter Wilma after she noticed a decline in his balance and a reduction in his ability to enjoy his favourite hobbies. The free programme, available across Brio centres in Cheshire West and Chester for eligible adults 65 plus through referral, supports adults aged 65 and over through tailored weekly exercise sessions designed to improve mobility and independence. Wilma said that the programme has played a vital role in her father's recovery, giving him the strength and confidence to regain his independence after a serious health setback last year. She said, "We could not feel in safer hands. One nurse even said, 'He does squats better than me.' Beyond the physical benefits, he has also built new friendships and connections through the group." Mr. McPhee celebrated his 100th birthday in February, surrounded by friends and fellow participants at Brio Ellesmere Port. The Falls Prevention Programme is part of Brio's wider efforts to support older adults, with over 17 classes running weekly across 7 Brio centres and outreach locations in Cheshire West and Chester. Brio say, "Our 25-week Falls Prevention Programme is a free evidence-based service designed to help you improve your mobility, confidence, and independence. You'll attend weekly group sessions at accessible locations across Cheshire West and Chester, with guided home exercises to help you build strength and stability. Our classes focus on gentle but effective movements designed to improve your balance and coordination. We tailor exercises to your ability, ensuring a safe and supportive environment, whether you're looking to regain strength after inactivity or prevent future falls, we're here to support you every step of the way. You'll also receive personal advice on making your home safer to reduce falls. This program is free for eligible adults over 65 living in Cheshire West and Chester. You need to be referred by a GP or health social care professional.
3 special trains from Chester and Frodsham will be hauled by an historic steam locomotive this summer to mark the 150th anniversary of one of the world's most spectacular railway journeys. An army of 6,000 navvies spent 6 years building the viaducts, bridges and tunnels on the route between Settle and Carlisle, before the first passenger trains finally ran in 1876. And the magic of that trip will be created in June, when the Dalesman train takes passengers from Chester to retrace the route through the rugged beauty of the Yorkshire Dales and the Eden Valley. A spokesman for West Coast Railways, which is organising the journeys, said the trips could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many. He said it will be 73 miles of pure nostalgia as the train plunges through 14 tunnels and steams across 22 viaducts, including the magnificent 24-arch, half-mile-long, Grade 2-listed one at Ribblehead, which is 104 feet high. Other possible locomotives include the crimson-liveried Jubilee-class engine Galatea and Oliver Cromwell, a Britannia-class engine, which hauled the last scheduled British Rail steam train in August 1968. And several of the vintage carriages that make up the train featured in the Harry Potter films. The first Dalesman service will run on Thursday, June the 11th, setting out from Chester before picking up more passengers at Frodsham, Warrington Bank Quay, Leyland and Preston stations. There will be further trains on August the 6th and September the 10th. They will be diesel hauled for part of the journey before a steam locomotive takes over for the section between Carlisle and Settle. Fares start at £98, with half price for children.
Chester Zoo is celebrating the birth of giant otter triplets in a rare boost for one of the world's most endangered species. Fewer than 5,000 are thought to survive in the wild. The trio are the first of their kind to be born at the zoo in several years as part of an international conservation effort to boost numbers. Arriving to first-time parents Benita and Manu, the pups have remained tucked away in their cosy holt, with mum feeding them regularly until they have more than tripled in size. Following their first health checkup with the zoo's veterinary team, conservationists have revealed the pups to be 2 males and a female, with the names yet to be chosen. Rachel Boatwright, assistant team manager of carnivores at the zoo, said, "The arrival of these 3 giant otter pups is a hugely special moment and marks the first time the species has been born here in 7 years. The pups recently had their very first health checkup at 8 weeks old, where they were weighed and had their heart, teeth, and overall condition assessed by the zoo's vets. We're delighted to confirm that all 3 are healthy and thriving, and that we have 2 males and 1 female pup. At 8 weeks old, the pups will now start to venture outside alongside parents Benita and Manu, who will start introducing them to the water and of all the essential skills that they need as they grow. Giant otters are the world's largest species of otter. In Spanish, they're often referred to as Obo de Rio, the river wolf, due to their powerful build, sharp teeth, and highly social nature. As one of the apex predators in the waterways, as one of the apex predators in the waterways where they live, they play a crucial role in maintaining the health and balance of freshwater ecosystems. Kirsten Pullen, Chief Conservation Officer at the zoo, added, "Parents Manu and Benita arrived at Chester from two European zoos as part of the Endangered Species Breeding Program. The pair were carefully matched together based on their genetics to help play a role in securing a future for the species. They live in a specially designed habitat with multiple water pools. Giant otters live mostly on a fish diet, but supplement this in the wild with snakes, river crabs, and even smaller caimans, which are members of the alligator family. Fully grown adults will measure up to more than a meter and a half in length."
People living in Great Britain who plan to travel to EU countries with their dogs, cats, or ferrets now face changed paperwork requirements. With EU pet passports that may already be in their possession, potentially no longer valid for entry. The new rules, announced by the EU, came into force on the 22nd of April this year, and they cover non-commercial travel. So they apply to holidays and personal trips, not commercial pet movements. The Animal and Plant Health Agency said EU pet passports should now only be issued to people whose main home is in the EU. Pet passports held by GB residents, including those issued before the 22nd of April, may no longer be accepted at EU borders. The agency said GB residents should get an Animal Health Certificate, AHC, for any dog, cat or ferret travelling from England, Wales or Scotland to an EU country, even if they already hold an EU pet passport. AHCs are single use, meaning a new one is needed for each trip from Great Britain to the EU. Under these new rules, however, they last longer once travel begins. An AHC can now be used for up to 6 months for onward travel within the EU and re-entering Great Britain, as long as the animal's rabies vaccinations remain valid. GB residents can still use EU pet passports for the return journey into Great Britain. The maximum number of pets that can travel in a private vehicle has also changed. The previous limit of 5 pets per person has been replaced by a limit of 5 pets per private vehicle. Exceptions cover pets travelling to competitions, exhibitions or training, provided specific conditions are met. There is also a new rule covering situations where a pet travels without its owner. If the owner is not accompanying the animal, the pet must travel within 5 days of the owner, and the person travelling with it must carry written permission from the owner alongside the animal's travel documents. Individual EU member states may have their own additional entry requirements. The government's guidance on taking pets abroad and bringing them back to Great Britain has been updated and is available at gov.uk.
Pupils from a city primary school have been busy helping house builder Redrow preen its duck, ready to make a splash at this year's Chester Duck Race. The Countess of Chester Hospital's annual duck race takes place on Saturday the 25th of April and includes community and corporate sponsored ducks decorated and dressed up to undertake the race. Redrow Northwest is a returning sponsor and enlisted the help of Belgrave Primary School in Five Ashes Road to decorate their duck, named by the pupils as Alpha Betty the Duck, for the big day. Juliet Benton, head teacher at Belgrave Primary School, said, "Taking part in the Chester Duck Race has been a wonderful opportunity for our pupils. They loved bringing Alpha Betty the Duck to life, and it's been a joy to see their creativity shine for such a good cause. We're proud to support the Countess of Chester Hospital and grateful to Redrow for involving our school in this fantastic community event. We look forward to cheering Alpha Betty on." Amanda Jones, head of sales at Redrow Northwest, said, "We're really looking forward to this year's Chester Duck Race. A few members of our team will be helping out on the day. It's a great event for a good cause and lots of fun. Thank you to all the pupils and staff at Belgrave Primary School for doing such a great job. Let's hope this decor will help Alpha Betty the Duck win the race. The Chester Duck Race will be held from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. on the 25th of April." Well, we hope that you find our selection of news items from this week of interest. I'd now like to thank our readers, Helen, Esther, Patrick, Jan and Caris, and also Owen, who will be uploading this edition at some point, probably tomorrow morning. So I'm going to invite our readers to join me in saying goodbye to end this live part of this week's edition. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. It's Earth Day. This week, 22nd of April, marks Earth Day, a chance to bring awareness to environmental issues and help protect the planet. The theme this year is Our Power, Our Planet, which focuses on all the different things we can be doing together to make a difference. Some of the campaigns running alongside Earth Day involve tackling plastic pollution with the Great Global Cleanup, teaching young people about the environment and climate change, are encouraging people to choose sustainable fashion, that is, reusing or recycling clothes to get more wear from them. Events will continue after Earth Day with everyone, families, workplaces and communities, encouraged to make small changes to help.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Well, hello there. It's Andrew here again, and I've got a short quiz of 10 questions for you. I call them general knowledge, but if you know the answer, they'll be easy, and if you don't, it'd be a bit of a challenge for you. But best of luck. So, question one. What is the name of Dennis the Menace's dog in the Beano comics? Question 2. What name is given to the Japanese art of flower arranging? Question 3. At the 2026 Winter Olympics, which were held in Italy, do you remember which country topped the medal table? And on this one, I'm giving away a bonus point if you're clever enough to tell me how many medals of each colour they got. Question 4. Famous painters. Which French artist is known for his series of paintings of Rouen Cathedral? Question 5. Which musical features the songs All I Ask of You and Masquerade? Question 6. TV. One of my favourite TV shows is Doctor Who, and I've watched it ever since the very first one, so that's giving a bit of age away. But my question to you today is, can you tell me who played the fourth Doctor? Question 7. Which fruit includes varieties called Pink Lady, Royal Gala, and Braeburn? Question 8. Which soft drink was first invented in Germany in 1940 due to trade embargoes that had been placed on Coca-Cola syrup? Question 9. The name of which pasta shape literally translates from Italian into English as butterflies? And question 10. Who wrote the 1972 novel Watership Down? Well, that's all our questions for this one, and we'll be back with some answers a little later. Thank you. Hello again, it's Andrew here, and I've got some answers to those quiz questions that we tested you with earlier. Question 1, I asked you, what was the name of Dennis the Menace's dog in the Beano comics? Well, I'm hoping that you all probably knew that the answer we were looking for is Gnasher, with of course the silent G. We first met him in Beano number 1363, way back at the end of August in 1968. And he went on to become a firm favourite of the Beano readers, and eventually he got his own comic strip. But did you know that he has got 5 daughters and a son? And so hopefully the Gnasher family will continue for many years yet. Question 2. I asked you about the Japanese art of flower arranging. Well, it is called Ikebana. I've probably pronounced that dreadfully wrong, but anything that looks like Ikebana on your answer will be given the points. Not, of course, bonsai, which one or two may have thought. Unlike decorative Western bouquets of flowers, Ikebana emphasises minimalism, asymmetry, and, through the use of branches, leaves and seasonal blooms, it aims to capture a serene, fleeting moment of nature while reflecting the creator's inner state. There you go. That should calm us all down for today, shouldn't it? Question 3. I asked you about the Winter Olympics, which were held in Italy in 2026. And who topped the medal table? Well, it was Norway. They had an excellent Games and they sat at the top of the table for a long time, really. In all, they received 41 medals, 18 gold, 12 silver and 11 bronze. If you got anywhere near 41 as your answer to the number, bonus points are yours for the caping. Now, Great Britain did okay. I mean, let's be honest, we're not really a country for Winter Olympics, but we did reach 15th place with 5 medals in total, 3 golds, 1 silver and 1 bronze. Anyway, on to the next one. Question 4. Famous painters. Did you know the French artist who did a series of paintings of Rouen Cathedral? Well, it was Claude Monet. He died about 100 years ago this year, so 1926. He was born in 1840 in Paris. And the cathedral series was painted in the 1890s. He is perhaps more famous for some of his other works, including Water Lilies and Haystacks. But Claude Monet got you the point. Question 5. I asked you about the musical that features the songs All I Ask of You and Masquerade. Well, Phantom of the Opera is what we were looking for. The musical, with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber, first opened in London in 1986. And then in New York 2 years later. It's been an amazing success over the years. And it was based on a novel of the same name, which was written way back in 1910 by Gaston Leroux. Question 6 was all about Doctor Who. And quite simply, could you tell me who the 4th Doctor was? Well, it was Tom Baker who played the part. And he took over from John Pertwee in 1974. and played the Doctor until 1981 when Peter Davidson took over. And Tom Baker remains the longest serving actor in the role in what is the world's longest running TV sci-fi series. So a couple of superlatives in the answer there for you. Question 7. Which fruit includes varieties called Pink Lady, Royal Gala and Braeburn? Well, it is the apple. Did you know there are more than 7,500 varieties? It seems that people who grow apples call those cultivars, but I'll stick with varieties. And it is thought that it was perhaps first domesticated, that is, eaten by us lot, more than 4,000 years ago. So apples have certainly been around a long time. But again, you get your point if you said apple. Question 8 was all around the soft drink company invented in Germany, or more correctly, the soft drink that was created in Germany. Well, it's Fanta. And it originated in Germany as a Coca-Cola alternative, and it soon dominated the German market with 3 million cases being sold in 1943. So that's during the Second World War, and it was dominating the market. The current formulation of Fanta with its orange flavour was developed in Italy in 1955. And interestingly, in those early days, many bottles were not actually consumed as a drink at all, but were used in cooking to add sweetness and flavour to soups and stews as sugar was severely rationed. So Fanta's our answer for that one. Question 9. I asked you about the pasta shape whose name translates to butterflies. Well, it is farfalle or farfalla, which is the pasta whose shape, well, it does look like butterfly wings. There are many different pasta shapes and names, including spaghetti, which translates as little strings, and vermicelli, which translates as little worms. I'm not going to do a long list of them, of course. But did you know that the singular of ravioli is raviolo? So if you've only got one on your plate, it should be, I've got a raviolo. That's enough of that pasta trivia for now anyway. Question 10, our last question for this one. Who wrote the 1972 novel Watership Down? Richard Adams is the man we're looking for. It was his debut novel, and it features the adventures of a group of rabbits and was based on stories he told his young daughters, who pushed him to write them down, Daddy. Now, somewhat later on after the book was published, Adams tells us in his autobiography that a number of the rabbits' characters were actually based on real people that he knew when he served in Operation Market Garden, which was the Battle of Arnhem in 1944. So if you go and read the book again, you might spot characterisations of real people like sergeant majors and captains and privates and the like. But Richard Adams was the man we're looking for. Well, that's the end of our quiz for this time. Thank you so much, and speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
TNF Soundings.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the sports news. Phil Parkinson hailed the impact made by George Thomason playing out of position. Thomason joined Wrexham from Championship High Flyers Bolton Wanderers, where he was captain and a key figure in the Trotters midfield. Used in that role in the racecourse, the 25-year-old switched to left wing-back for the Boxing Day clash with Sheffield United because Libby Kakace was out injured, and he was a revelation, having 3 assists in the 5-3 win. With Kakace back on the sidelines following a brief return to action, Thomason has continued on the wing, and he has produced a series of impressive performances in Wrexham's quest to secure a Championship playoff spot, earning praise from his manager. We signed Tomo from Bolton. He hadn't played at this level, but obviously we watched a lot of him, and he felt he had the attributes to step up physically, technically, and character, said Parkinson. We started looking at him in training at left wing back prior to the Christmas period, and we played him against Sheffield United when he got 3 assists, and he was just unbelievable. He has given us so much there, and his heart is just immense. He's big, he's powerful, he's got real quality, he's creative in that final third. Tomo typifies the character you need to win games of football and to have successful teams. I always feel that you've got a great chance with people like Tomo in your team. I'm so pleased with him. He's a real leader, he's a quiet guy away from the pitch, but in the dressing room and on the pitch, he really is a leader. He had the armband at times at Bolton, and he's a great player. When asked whether he sees Thomason's long-term position as a wing-back, Parkinson added, who knows, because he's a very good midfield player as well, and he can play as a 6 or an 8 in that role. We need versatility, especially with the injuries we've had, but we've got some good options.
Emperor Penguins need help. Urgent action is needed to protect emperor penguins from extinction caused by climate change, warns the World Wildlife Fund. The species has now been downgraded from near threatened to endangered on the IUCN Red List, which experts predict their population could halve over the next 50 years. The penguins depend on fast ice, which is sea ice connected to land, the seabed or ice shelves. That's where they mate, lay their eggs and raise their chicks. But the ice is melting at an increased rate because of global warming caused by humans. World Wildlife Fund is set to call for emperor penguins to be listed as a specially protected species at the next Antarctic Treaty meeting in Japan in May. This would give their habitat extra protection against human activity, including tourism and shipping. The Antarctic fur seal has also been classed as endangered on the Red List. Climate change has put pressure on the seal's food sources, causing the population to also halve since 1999.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Scientific advances offer hope for patients with sight loss. In summary, doctors have discovered new ways to treat low eye pressure and dry macular degeneration. Trials of both treatments have delivered sight improvements for patients and brought hope that more people could benefit as the new discoveries are rolled out more widely. This article is written by Heather and read by Vivian. Two recent trials have discovered new ways of treating eye conditions, and both offer potential for wider application to help more people suffering from sight loss. In one breakthrough, doctors at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London discovered that a low-cost gel could restore vision for patients with hypotony, an unusual but dangerous condition caused by low pressure in the eyeball. Meanwhile, in California, the inventors of a tiny microchip were looking for volunteers with advanced age-related dry macular degeneration to sign up for trials to help them read again. Some 32 patients joined the trial, including 5 in the UK, to have a microchip implanted behind one retina, with a wireless link to video glasses. First, let's find out more about the gel treatment. Moorfields Hospital in London is home to a dedicated clinic for people with hypotony. This is a condition where the pressure in the eyeball becomes too low and the eye can start to collapse. The low pressure is caused by a lack of the natural jelly-like fluid inside the eye. This deficit can be caused by a range of factors, for example, an infection, a reaction to medication, or an after-effect of eye surgery. It's a serious problem as it can lead to blindness. Until this trial, the standard treatment for hypotony used steroids and silicone oil to plump up the eye. However, there were problems. For example, the silicone oil could be difficult to see through. The treatment didn't restore much vision, and the substances used could be toxic if used long term. Looking for an alternative, the Moorfields doctors decided to try an alternative treatment using a low-cost, transparent, water-based gel. The gel, known as HPMC or hydroxypropyl methylcellulose, was already used in some types of eye surgery. But rather than using it as a one-off, the Moorfields team decided to inject it into the main part of the eye as a new regular treatment. Gel was injected every 3 to 4 weeks for a total of 10 months, with remarkable results, increasing the size and pressure of the eyes and restoring sight. 7 of the 8 patients who received the treatment experienced improvements in vision and eye pressure after a 12-month course of the treatment. Moorfields consultant Harry Petrushkin, who led the work, said, "We are excited that this simple treatment has proved so effective for patients with this rare condition. This is the start of a process of understanding more about the balance of fluid inside the eye, leading to improved care for our patients. There are now hopes that the treatment can be made more widely available, although there is still more work to do to work out which patients can benefit. And now let's turn to the high-tech implants being tested on patients with dry age-related macular degeneration. People with age-related macular degeneration typically suffer from blurred or distorted central vision, making it difficult to read or to see details. However, they often retain some photoreceptor cells and retinal neurons in their optic nerve that can pass visual information to the brain, allowing some peripheral vision. Aiming to help improve sight for people living with this problem, scientist Daniel Palanca from Stanford University in California collaborated with colleagues to develop a microchip called Prima. Prima is a tiny 2mm square solar-powered wireless microchip that is only the thickness of a human hair. The chip is implanted in the back of the patient's eye, and, once in place, it can receive images via an infrared transfer and send those images along the optic nerve to the patient's brain. It's a complicated multi-stage process, as the images need to be captured and processed before they can be sent to the brain. In simple terms, it works like this. The images are first of all captured by a small camera mounted on a pair of glasses. All images are captured in black and white. The camera sends an infrared beam of the images to the implanted Prima chip. The Prima chip sends the images back to the small pocket-sized processor, which enhances the images to make them clearer. And finally, the enhanced images are sent back to the brain via the Prima chip and the optic nerve, allowing the patient to see the images. The results of the trial so far are impressive. After a year, 27 of the 32 patients given the implant were able to read again using their central vision. The glasses allowed them to magnify what they were seeing by up to 12 times and to adjust the brightness and contrast. At the moment, Prima only uses black and white images, but the developers hope a colour version may be possible in future. While restoring the ability to read is life-changing for the patients involved in the trial, it is fair to say that getting used to Prima came with some challenges. About 2/3 of the volunteers experienced short-term side effects following implants, including high pressure in the eye, although this didn't prevent vision improvements. The other challenge was learning how to use the combination of Prima, glasses and pocket processor, which took several months. In the UK, Sheila, age 70, was one of the patients who signed up for Prima trials at Moorfields Eye Hospital. She said that learning to read using the system needed huge concentration, but she's delighted with the results. She only uses the system indoors because she needs to hold her head very still and apply great concentration to be able to read. Sometimes she needs to put a pillow under her chin to steady her head so that she can focus on the letters of the word she's trying to read. Mahi Mukwit is a consultant surgeon at Moorfields who led the UK arm of the trial. He said the Prima system was the first implant to give patients meaningful vision that they can use in their daily life, such as reading and writing. Prima is not yet licensed, so it's not available outside clinical trials. But let's hope that the results of the trials mean it could be made more widely available in the future.
DNF Soundings.
New recycling rules for England. New rules about the way we recycle at home have come into force across England, but many councils aren't ready for them yet. The government's simpler recycling scheme means homes should receive clear guidance and separate collection bins for food waste, recycling and rubbish. However, while some councils were already collecting food waste, a BBC investigation found that dozens of others may not start doing so until later in the year, or even into 2027. They say this is due to a lack of specialist vehicles and funding, even though the government has provided over £340 million to help. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, said it is working with councils to fix the problem. It hopes that food waste collections will encourage people to waste less food. Collected leftovers will be used to generate electricity instead of rotting in landfill and releasing gases. Solar power. Great Britain generated a record-breaking 14,414 megawatts of solar power in one day at the start of the month, which is enough to power 11 million homes. In March, the renewables energy that was generated by solar and wind farms combined was enough to save Britain from importing £1 billion worth of gas from overseas. It was also good news for wind power too in April. On Saturday, 11th of April, wind provided 60.1% of our electricity.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. In November of 2025, I visited the North Norfolk coast. The intention being to go to Titchwell RSPB Reserve. Up to 40,000, maybe 50,000, pink-footed geese travel to the North Norfolk coast. As I parked on the car park, I could hear the sound of a muntjac deer calling. It was close to my vehicle, and I thought that as soon as I opened the door, it would move. However, it continued to call, and I was able to get some recording kit set up at the back of my van. You may hear the occasional sound of somebody's voice as they walk across the car park to their vehicles. I realised that there was more than one muntjac, and that was probably why it did not move, as it was calling to the other males in the area.
Yeah.
There are only two indigenous deer in the UK, the red and the roe. Muntjac deer were introduced into Woburn Park in Bedfordshire in the late 19th, early 20th century, and escaped from there and rapidly establishing feral populations throughout the UK. They are also known as the barking deer, which is quite obvious from the calls that I recorded. RSPB Titchwell is a great reserve. From the car park, you walk through a small woodland area, past the RSPB buildings, and onto a long straight footpath. This leads past some lakes to your right-hand side, eventually ending up on the beach. It's about a kilometre in length. This is a recording of some Brent geese, a small goose that migrates into the UK in winter. They had landed on one of the lakes and were washing the salt water from their wings and their bodies before moving into the marsh, either to roost or to feed during the evening period. There are also some pinkfoot in the area, and you can hear those occasionally in the background. The following day, I went on the search for pinkfoot geese. Between 40 and 50,000 pinkfoot geese migrate into the UK every year, coming from Iceland, Svalbard and the Greenland areas. In Norfolk, the farmers leave the tops of the sugar beet, once it's been cropped, for the pinkfoot geese to feed on. And behind Titchwell, in the farmers' fields, there can be large flocks that sometimes congregate. So I went in search and found probably 1,000 pinkfoot geese sitting in a large field. They were vocal, but it was quite subdued. However, I set up some recording kit behind a hedge and just stood there watching them. As I did so, I suddenly realised that the vocalisations had increased, and as I turned around, I saw massive flocks of pinkfoot geese flying across the fields, coming into land. It was an amazing sight. There was three, maybe four, large flocks, and the sound became really intense as they flew over me and then landed in the field. I do hope that you enjoyed those recordings.
TNS Soundings.
And now some news from China. Robo-taxis in mass malfunction. A glitch caused more than 100 self-driving taxis to freeze in the middle of fast-moving traffic in the Chinese city of Wuhan. The system error resulted in traffic jams, with eyewitness footage also appearing to show a small crash. Some passengers reported being stranded in their taxi for over an hour, with an on-screen message asking them not to open their door. Police said that all the passengers eventually exited the vehicle safely and that they are investigating the cause of the incident. Chinese tech giant Baidu, which runs the Apollo Go taxi service in 22 cities, operates more than 1,000 vehicles in the Wuhan district alone.